The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We're out here in Dublin Zoo. You may hear some of the sounds in the background. Could you imagine the waking up every day to those sounds? Maybe hearing the calls of a South African hornbill or perhaps catching sight of a Red River hog. It won't happen to you, but it happens as a normal part of his waking up to Dr. Christoph Switzer, who is the director of Dublin Zoo. He's been here for the last 5 years and lives right here on the grounds of the zoo. Christoph, good morning and thank you for welcoming us here.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you very much for having me and welcome to Dublin Zoo.
Well, it's a home from home for me, I must say. I'm so familiar with every bit of it. But, I mean, the confines of the zoo have actually expanded in relatively recent years with the donation of land from the Auras.
That's true. That was in the late 1990s, very early 2000s. We opened the African Plains on 13 hectares of land that used to belong to the Auras and Ukhtaran. Very kindly, the government gave the zoo this land, and the incoming president had to sign off the deal, as I believe it was at the time.
And it's made a huge difference for some of the animals that they have the freedom to roam, that it mimics more the kind of life they might lead in the wild.
Indeed, an enormous difference. Dublin Zoo used to be a very Victorian zoo, you know, up until the late 1990s. The African Plains really opened up that possibility of expanding, of giving the animals very naturalistic habitats. The African savanna, the gorilla habitat, the Kasuranga elephant trail later then as well. So when you come here, you see a very different zoo, a very modern zoo. And the animals really feel at home in, you know, very natural habitats.
What is it like actually living here?
It's magical. It's really brilliant. You know, as you say, I wake up to a chorus of different animals. I can hear the sea lions. I can hear the elephants quite often. The lions, even though they're quite far away. My next door neighbors are Red River hogs and the Abyssinian hornbills from Northern Africa. I had to get used to it. I have to say I didn't live inside the zoo in my previous job at Bristol Zoo. We lived in a normal village in South Gloucestershire, and my children in particular had to get used to it too when we moved here back in 2020, mid-pandemic. You know, we were locked in for 2 weeks, first of all, in quarantine. And we heard all those animals, but couldn't actually go to see them because it was COVID, you know, and we weren't allowed into the zoo in the first 2 weeks. So we got very used to the Red River hogs on the other side of our garden fence. They probably heard my children's voices every day. And when we first went to meet them, they came to the fence as if they had, you know, known us for all along. It was really brilliant.
Now, the role of the zoo is important in conservation. How many of the species here are endangered species in their own habitats in the wild, and how important is the work that is done here?
It's about just over half of the animal collection of the species here at Dublin Zoo. They are threatened in the wild, either vulnerable, endangered or critically endangered in one of these IUCN Red List threatened categories. We want to build that up over time to as many as 75% of the species we keep here, so that everybody who comes and visits Dublin Zoo can say, I have visited a conservation organization. You know, all of these animals the zoo is doing something for, either in the wild in terms of protecting the remaining populations in the wild, or indeed in the zoo in terms of breeding endangered species for potential future release. Two very important parts of what we do here at the zoo.
And do animals regularly get released back into the wild? Because, I mean, they have to learn to be wild again.
That's true. It is a very complicated thing. You know, I wouldn't say regularly. These are internationally coordinated programs. And we would contribute animals to those programs. So, for instance, golden lion tamarins from Dublin Zoo have gone back to Brazil and have been released in a place called Poço das Antas Reserve. So it happens, but it is internationally coordinated. It needs range state mandates, for example. It's an IUCN process quite often, International Union for the Conservation of Nature. So we are a small part of it, but you know, whenever we are asked, we contribute to it.
And you yourself have been elevated to a great position in international zoo.
Yes, and indeed I was voted as the incoming EASA president, which is the European Association of Zoos and Aquariums. So we have about 450 member zoos, the largest of the zoo associations in the world. It's a lot of politics, a very interesting job, you know, sitting around tables, chairing meetings of other zoo directors. brilliant task.
And I'm now, are zoos threatened, do you think, by certain attitudes that you find in various cohorts of the population who don't like the idea of animals being locked up in any shape or form, no matter how generous the accommodation might be?
I would say we are not threatened by that. This is a minority of people. We get 1.2 million visitors here at Dublin Zoo. That's about 25% of the entire Irish population visiting Dublin Zoo every single year. If you add Fota Wildlife Park to that, we have a huge share of the market, you know, and of the population visiting us. And I think it's a very small minority who really oppose zoos and don't like zoos. And I think zoos have changed so dramatically if these people would actually look at the facts and see what we do, you know, how much we do for conservation, how many people visit us, how that money, which is money that is spent on leisure activities otherwise, is converted into conservation spend. It is a very, very different story, and many of these people don't see that, unfortunately.
Simple question. How do you know your animals are happy?
Well, I see them every day, and I have a brilliant team of staff here. We have 40 frontline animal keepers, 3 veterinarians here, day in, day out, 24/7, who know exactly how these animals feel. And if there's anything wrong, they're the first to spot that and alert the vets to it. And we immediately go and look after them. So we know these animals well enough to say there is something happening here. Let's have a look at that in a bit more detail and do something about
it. If they thrive, if they put on weight, if they breed, then likely they're very happy.
Yeah, it's not only that, you know, but we also give them choice and control over their habitats, over their environments. We let them go inside or outside, however they please. The elephants, for instance, have 24/7 access to their houses and to their outdoor habitat. You know, so that they can choose, this is what we want to do now and this is what we want to do next. Sometimes that's a conflict with the visiting public because the animals might be out of view, so we have to explain that. But I'd rather explain that than not have the animals choose what they want to do.
I mean, if you go on a safari, you may or may not see any of the big 5. That's the way it is.
And that's exactly it. You know, I tend to say we don't just show animals, we show animal life here. And that's exactly the same as in the wild, as you say. You know, people don't readily always see a lion when they go on a safari. They might not see a lion here, but when they are patient, when they give it time, when they come back to the lion habitat, the chances are very high that they will spot one eventually.
Now, your focus is obviously primarily on the animals, but there are the commercial elements, the business element of the zoo. How much of your time goes into that side rather than simply animal care?
A lot of my time. This is really the conundrum when you become a zoo director. You know, it isn't really the nice work anymore, perhaps, that you used to do. I worked in pretty much every job there is in a zoo, really. I started cleaning tables at Cologne Zoo many, many years ago. And as a director, as you say, you have to look after all the different departments. As a director of conservation that I was at Bristol Zoo, I, you know, traveled quite a lot and I went into those conservation projects, making sure that they worked. I worked with animals in a previous life as well, much closer than I do now. So it's probably the more boring aspects that a zoo director has to do. I still walk through the zoo every morning and every evening because I live here, you know, and I see the animals, of course. But what have I done today? I've had a phone call with Dublin City Council and I chaired a senior management team meeting. So that is the sort of more mundane aspects, if you like, of my work.
I suppose, though, knowing that you're the director of one of the oldest zoos in the world, I mean, 1831 it was founded, 1840 opened to visitors for the first time. Yeah. It's a very august institution, a very venerable institution.
It is indeed, and I'm really happy, you know, to be allowed to run Ireland's national treasure, you know, and that the Irish people put so much trust in me. It is a very venerable, very old institution, luckily with a relatively modern estate, because my predecessor was able to convert many of those Victorian buildings into modern animal habitats. But yeah, we are the 4th oldest zoo in the world after Vienna, Paris and London, as you say, 1831. And it's brilliant to be able to run an institution that old, 194 years now.
And long may you enjoy it. Dr. Christoph Schwitzer, Director of Dublin Zoo, thank you very much for joining us and us joining you here at Dublin Zoo.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.